Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, along with Shab Markowitz. We are your hosts for this weekend edition. Also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. On this weekend show, what you can expect is initially a bit of a recap of some of the economic data and market moves we've seen in the near term. And then we're going to be shifting our focus a little bit more to the commodities sector, touching on precious metals, but then also looking at a couple other commodities and resources that have a bit more going for them. So, as promised, we're starting off with a quick recap of economic data and market moves as we are chatting with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief over at The Money Show. Now, Mike, just a general comment on the recent economic data that has come out of the U.S. It's broadly better than expectations. We saw jobless claims this week, as well as a revision to GDP, as well as inflation data. Almost across the board, we are seeing just better than expected U.S. data. What's been your takeaway from this recent data here, Mike?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I think I headlined a recent piece, recession, what recession, after looking at the last round of data. I mean, it's been pretty comprehensive because it's not just a few things here and there. It's the claims data. It's the housing data, surprisingly enough, with interest rates where they are. It's been some of the business investment figures there and durable goods and so on. And all of it points to an economy that, despite a very rapid, very extensive series of Fed interest rate hikes, seems to be trying to find its footing again here, after that period of struggling late in 2022 and early 2023. You look at what markets are telling you and you see the short end of the yield curve. You see two-year treasuries and other sort of indicators of that are most closely tied to expectations about Fed policy. Those yields are spiking quite a bit, especially this week. So it's definitely putting the Fed back in play. I mean, if you went back and look at what the Fed said after their big June pause, they didn't really take themselves out of play. It was more the market expecting and hoping, oh, okay, this pause is not just going to be one meeting. It's going to be for several. But Jerome Powell made clear this week that no, that's not the case. Most of the Fed is still on board for at least a couple more hikes this year, which matches what we saw in the dot plot. So sum it all up, it's definitely, again, an economy that's getting, is coming in hotter than expected in terms of the data. And you're seeing the market price that in by the sector, some of the more economically sensitive stuff rising. I mean, it's been a tech-led stock market for the first 4 or 5 months of 2023, but now you're really seeing some of the more economically sensitive things, small caps, transports, even housing and real estate, that's picked up. So the market character has been changing to reflect the fact that maybe we're not going to have a recession after all, and maybe the Fed's not off the table.
Yeah, Mike, it was interesting that you called this market pretty well as far as last year and even in late 2021. You were talking about being boring and being in safe defensive instruments. And then you shifted coming into this year to be bold and to get into some of these growth tech areas or areas that were maybe beat up and had stopped bottoming after, decreasing by 60-80% and then showing a little life. We've even seen that in the cryptoverse. We've seen that in a lot of the sectors, as you mentioned, the small caps that hadn't started moving. Is that still the way you see things playing out for the balance of this year, is to stay with the be bold theme?
Yeah. Here's the way I kind of see that big picture thinking there. You're absolutely right. I was very defensive for a year and a half leading into the end of 2022, but I saw a lot of things that made me recommend, look, if you're an investor, you've been hiding in utilities, defensives, things like that. Now it's time to go a little more on the offense because, the next 12 months, 12 to 18 months are probably going to look better for the markets. We've seen that, which is gratifying. I will say, I tend to think that you want to stick with that plan, and I'll explain why. you know, we had a tech-driven rally for the first 4 or 5 months of this year that in a lot of other sectors were just kind of sitting there like bumps on the log. They weren't keeping up. So, you know, that raised legitimate questions about breadth and what might happen. And there was really two scenarios I think could have played out. Either tech was going to catch down to the rest of the market that was lagging, or the rest of the market was going to catch up to what tech was doing. Or in other words, you'd see tech take a breather and all this other stuff that had been left behind start to catch up and rally next, which would help broaden out the market advance and keep it healthy. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, of those two scenarios, the more optimistic is the catch up scenario. And I think that's what you're seeing happen now. I don't think it means the Russell 2000 is going to rally 30% or whatever the way the NASDAQ had. But I do think what you're going to see and what you're starting to see is tech takes a breather. Tech sort of goes sideways, maybe loses a few percentage points, essentially chops while the other parts of the market catch up. And that for the second half of the year, I'm really on board with that line of thinking. And I think that's going to pay off for investors who don't just hide in tech. And not that there's anything wrong with tech in general, but, you know, look into some of those other sectors. I mean, if the economy is truly going to avoid recession and the Fed, to my legitimate surprise, might pull off the whole soft landing or whatever you want to call it scenario, then you're going to see that other stuff do well. So you want to make sure your portfolio isn't just all, you know, the top 5 or 10 names in tech that we all know and love. It's also things in economically sensitive sectors, you know, again, materials, industrials, small caps, you know, transports, things that are more tied to economic growth. So sum it up. Yeah, I would still say be bold is exactly what you want to be.
So regarding timing of this wider breadth move for the markets, I read a couple articles of people saying that this could very well just be end of the month, end of the quarter, end of the first half of the year window dressing for fund managers spreading out some of their portfolios for that beginning of the second half. Is this at play at all, Mike, in your eyes?
Yeah, you know, when you look at the way big money is run, I mean, absolutely, if you're a fund manager that because of the advance in tech, the market cap growth we've seen, just the, you know, the amount of money plowing into that sector and driving everything up, you're absolutely going to be saying, look, I got to rebalance some of this stuff. I got to take some of that off the table and I got to put money into some of these other things that haven't done as much just because if I want to match the market or roughly match the market or just make sure I don't have too many chips on, you know, on one bet, that's what's going to happen. But I think that, you know, if it was just being done for purely technical reasons, end of quarter, end of half year rebalancing, that's one thing. But if it's being done and this nascent move is going to turn into something else because the data supports it, then you've got a much more optimistic scenario, right? Then you've got a situation where this doesn't just happen for a few days at the end of the quarter. It's something that people can say, oh, you know what? I'm not just moving money around a little bit because I'm overweighted in tech. I'm moving money around because some of this other stuff is going to have better earnings performance going forward, better revenue outlook and so on. So I think that's probably what you see happen as we get further into the year. More money doesn't just rotate for technical reasons. It rotates for economic and data-driven reasons.
Well, Mike, we've laid out kind of the bullish thesis here for the markets. And so far, that is exactly how this year has been playing out. But earlier in the year and even the end of last year, we were asking people on the show, do you think it's possible with the markets being so forward-looking that when the Fed does get near the end, and I think most people can sniff out if there's one or two more hikes, fine, but they are closer to the end than the beginning of this rate tightening cycle, that there could be a sugar high in the markets. And we asked people over and over again, do you think we could see a big pop in the markets and a sugar high in everything and the risk back on in the markets where people are ready to speculate again? Is that a risk that we're seeing possibly just a sugar high of this potential Powell pause coming and that maybe the buying will get exhausted in a couple months here?
You know, I think we had that sugar high, or you can almost go as far as say cocaine high or whatever a couple years ago when it wasn't just AI stocks like we're seeing, you know, maybe be an example of a mania right now. It was every kind of tech company. It was profitless IPOs. It was meme stocks. It was, you know, SPACs. There was so much junk that was rallying in so many different parts of the market a couple years back that is what I would call a true mania, a true sugar high, a true dot-com esque type environment. And we all talked, I mean, you and I talked about that back then a couple years ago. What I see now is more legitimate. I mean, yeah, there's some frothy stuff. There's the AI chasing and so on. But, you know, it's more narrow than it was. It followed a denouement, an unwinding of all those other bubbles. I mean, it's not like all of a sudden you have 20 SPACs coming public a day. That bubble didn't just pop, it imploded, right? You saw that in profitless IPOs. There's not a new IPO coming out every 10 minutes. There's not, you know, a market completely dominated just by tech. It's one that's starting to broaden out versus the other way around. So I was much more worried about the mania, the silliness, the, you know, free money chasing everything environment a couple of years ago than I am now. And part of that also is because I think the impact of raising rates into this 5% range, getting rates to be roughly equivalent with CPI year over year, is that that gets real interest rates being positive again. And real interest rates being positive tends to get rid of that fuel for absolute manic behavior. So I would say, believe it or not, I'm actually less concerned. You know, there's always going to be some corner of the market where there's speculative stuff going on. But as long as it's not most of the market and it's just these few corners, there are these few places, you know, under a rug and so on, then that doesn't worry me as much.
What does this mean for the safe havens then, Mike? Gold, even the U.S. dollar, bonds, as interest rates remain high. How do these fare in this, what sounds like, better market environment?
You know, I still obviously have been bullish on gold and waiting for that breakout, which we did not see, unfortunately. You know, that I think if there's been one market I've been more wrong on, it's been that. Fortunately, it hasn't hurt me all that much. It's just been going mostly sideways and not breaking out as opposed to breaking down. You're starting to see in the last month, because the news is getting better, a couple more, if that, Fed hikes are being talked about, priced in the markets. And that's obviously taking some of the wind out of the sails of the gold market. But I do not think we're going to be back in a situation like we were in 2022, where the dollar was ripping every day, where gold was, you know, just being pressured relentlessly by a rising dollar and expectations the Fed was going to be hiking from here to kingdom come. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the dollar index, I mean, you know, the dollar index topped out last fall, you know, October, November timeframe. And even with the recent uptick in interest rates and even with the, you know, sort of expectations the economy is not in as bad shape as possible, it's not like the dollar is flying, right? So I don't think gold really hurts you. I think that we do need to get to the point where the market is convinced now the Fed is really done. And whereas now they're just wrestling with it, maybe they've got one more, maybe they got two more. And once that comes into play, that's where I think things like gold are gonna take over. And I would add, though, I mean, if the economic data gets better, you're gonna see money rotate more into sort of the base commodities versus precious, and that'll just be something you probably want to follow on with.
Well, Mike, you must be a mind reader. That's exactly what I was going to ask you about. How do you see the rest of the commodity sector set up in lieu of the economic backdrop?
You know, I mean, let's be honest. The commodities markets still are sensitive to issues of growth in China, since that's where a lot of world demand comes from. So I think what, you know, you're likely to see is some support in the commodities space come from, hey, if the U.S. economy is not going to have a recession, if it's not, you know, it might even do better than a soft landing, I think that's going to help some of the base metals. But what you're really going to want to see to get a big rally there is that you're going to need to see optimism about China and growth over there rebound. You know, they've been doing some stimulus around the edges here and there, but they're not sort of throwing money at building a building on every square foot of land in the country like they were a few years back. So that's why some of the base things like copper haven't taken off. But I do think if you can be more optimistic about the U.S. economy, then that's going to support some of the base metals complex. And I think it's going to be good for other things, maybe put a floor under oil, which obviously has had a, you know, struggle this year after a very strong year in 2022.
All right, Mike, thanks. Great summary. Great succinct summary of how you see this all playing out. Before I get you out of here, though, can you give us an update on some of the money shows that are coming up? Because I know you guys are continuing to expand your lineup.
People are coming out of the woodwork. The COVID stuff is behind us. They want to travel. They want to learn in person. They want to get that interaction from fellow investors and so on. So we've been, you know, seeing great attendance, great interest in our events, and we're responding by putting more on the calendar. You know, we'll be in Vegas again in August. We'll be in Toronto in September, in Orlando in the end of October, and right here in our backyard in Sarasota in December. So I got a lot of things cooking. I think that hopefully, you know, and I will say some of the speakers that we had earlier this year were very right and sort of helped shape my thinking on the Be Bold prospect, because they were, you know, bullish on tech at a time where not everybody yet was on that bandwagon. So, you know, hopefully as the year goes on, we'll see, you know, more of that interest and more of that bargain hunting going on that we've seen so far.
All right. Very cool. You're a busy man, Mike. So I really do appreciate you taking some time chatting with us and, well, sharing your outlook, which has played these markets and turned with the markets almost perfectly. Thanks as always for your time, Mike. We'll chat again in a few weeks.
Sounds good, Corey. Take care.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.